The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you doing?
Boker Tov. I just wonder if we can expand our Check Your Mezuzahs series to Syria as well.
Yes, I think so. Yeah, they seem to also have got themselves into a spot of bother.
Yeah, I mean, although in Syria, I think, you know, the source of the attack is a little bit more obvious. I think the Check the Mezuzahs applies really to when things are quite mysterious and we're not sure whether it's coincidence or whether it's by design. But in Syria, we read overnight that there were Israeli attacks, apparently attributed to Israel, at least by some of the news sites in Syria, that targeted facilities near to Damascus and in the area of Homs province. And it's not clear exactly what was targeted in these two locations, but it was significant that there hasn't been an attack carried out against the Syrian targets for quite some time, at least a month or so. And this comes after the recent re-election of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad for his fourth seven-year term in office. And it also comes only after the recent conflict that we had in Gaza. So this is a first on a few fronts, but yet more of the same, really, in many respects. So again, you know, we're not sure what the targets were. We understand that it probably comes from Israeli intelligence. There's been no response at all from the Israeli authorities, from the IDF, or anybody else. But this is really kind of just an ongoing story where we've seen this so many times before. The reports suggest that the attacks came from airplanes that were in Lebanese airspace and that actually did trigger anti-air defense systems within Syria, although we've already come to understand that they're not particularly effective against the Israeli Air Force.
Yeah, absolutely incredible to see this happening over and over again. And yeah, lots of mezuzahs to be checked in that region, as you've said. Anthony, one of the conversations that keep coming up is around the building in Gaza that was leveled by the IDF. It was also the home for Al Jazeera, Associated Press, etc. And there was a lot of criticism of Israel around it. There seems to be new information as to why Israel targeted this building. What has come to light?
Yes, so it was very controversial because of the fact that both Associated Press and Al Jazeera were located in that building that was effectively leveled, a multi-story office building, the Al Jala'a Tower, which was leveled during the recent conflict operation Guardian of the Walls. Yesterday, Israel's ambassador to the United States, Gilad Erdan, took time out in New York to meet with the president of Associated Press, Gary Pruitt, as well as the vice president for international news, Ian Phillips, at their offices in New York to try to explain what went down and why the IDF took the decision to warn all of those people in the tower to vacate very, very quickly indeed, and then to effectively level the tower, which is what the Israeli Air Force succeeded in doing. And what he said to them is that the building was actually being used by Hamas. There were Hamas activities going on in that building to try to develop an electronic jamming system that could effectively used against the Iron Dome defense system. So this is Hamas really trying to interrupt Israel's defense mechanism in order to allow its own missile attacks to be more effective by disabling Israel's Iron Dome system. That apparently was the activity that was taking place, the development work that was going on within that particular building that happened to house Associated Press's offices as well as those of Al Jazeera. Now, just to try to put into context what that would mean for Israel, the way that Iron Dome works is that Israel has a very, very broad-based detection system which allows the IDF to detect the moment any rocket is fired from Gaza. And it picks up the moment of firing, and then it also links in with the individual radar reading capability that the Iron Dome system has, which also detects the missile that has been fired. and it tracks its trajectory in order to map very, very quickly, all within milliseconds, exactly where it's going to land and if it's going to land in a location that might present risk to life and limb, present risk to property in that area, then the Iron Dome does its calculations and it launches a missile, of course, with some human intervention that is able to track the originally fired rocket and effectively intercept it in midair in order to prevent it from landing in that location that might present risk when it lands on the ground. Now, if the signal, if the radar signal is interrupted, then obviously there is an inability, first of all, to detect the firing, and second of all, potentially an inability to track the trajectory and to allow the Iron Dome anti-defense missile to intercept in the air. So that would be a very, very serious problem that the IDF would encounter, and it would put many Israeli lives at risk. And so when you put it into that context, then leveling that building seems to be kind of the most obvious, the cheapest, and the most the most obvious thing to do for any country, for any army, where they can see that whatever work is going on in that building could potentially put hundreds of thousands of people at risk right away. So when you think about it like that, at least in the way that I look at things, it seems to be the most obvious decision that was taken by the IDF to just get rid of that particular threat. It's a threat against our defense system, and we can't afford to have that happen. Obviously, it makes also the IDF think again about what they might do to protect the signals, to make them a little bit more difficult to jam. That's a separate discussion. So one hopes that at least the Associated Press might understand what the issue is. Of course, Al Jazeera was very quick to say, well, this is Israel trying to prevent freedom of speech because they don't like what we say. They don't like the way that we broadcast.
Al Jazeera and freedom of speech is hard to say it in the same sentence.
When it suits them, of course, they would they would want to say that. But, you know, Israel does have a democracy. We do believe in the freedom of speech. Al Jazeera is free to broadcast from Israel and about Israel in whatever way they see fit, even though what they have to say doesn't necessarily always represent the truth or what Israel would like to have broadcast. But that's just, what international press is all about. But, of course, the fact that that building was destroyed with the Al Jazeera equipment inside gave them a little bit more fuel for their fire to accuse Israel. But I think that the context has been put into some sort of perspective, at least in my view, and I hope in the view of the general public and particularly in the view of the Associated Press as well.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Let's continue our conversation as well about the flag march in Jerusalem. We started that as a dialogue yesterday. Lots of input from listeners. I am conflicted myself around it. I feel it's unnecessary, but then at the same time, the fact that a terror organization is calling the shots in Israel or trying to is problematic for me. What is the latest status?
So this has become a very, very political hot potato for a number of different reasons. First of all, the discussion that you've just had about how can it be that Hamas will dictate to us what we do in our capital, how we behave, how can they threaten that they're going to effectively begin a war again or begin a potential conflict by firing missiles at us on the basis of the fact that we wish to have a certain undertake a certain activity in the capital, Jerusalem. So when it becomes Hamas from Gaza threatening us, then it's slightly different than the threat that we perceive internally within Jerusalem by people who might feel that marching through the Damascus Gate with Israeli flags through the Muslim Quarter is a little provocative and might not be the most appropriate thing to do. Be that as it may, the Prime Minister and the Minister of Defense, Benny Gantz, yesterday seemed to reach a compromise which saw a few changes made in order to actually allow the flag march to proceed after yesterday it seemed that it was going to be cancelled. So the first change that was made is that the date itself will be next week on the 15th of June and not this week as was originally planned. That, by the way, is quite ironic because that date happens to fall 2 days. It's Tuesday next week and it happens to fall 2 days after the vote is due to take place in the Knesset on Sunday of confidence in the new government. So this could potentially be a decision that the old government is taking for the new government to have to deal with after they take office next week. And one doesn't really understand how the new government might view this decision and the march itself. So that's the first change that was made. The second change was that the cabinet and the prime minister with the minister of defense as well, the cabinet were also involved, but particularly those two individuals, they set it to the Jerusalem police and the march organizers to redefine the route of the march. Clearly the police were unhappy about having to take care of security of a march that was going to go through the Damascus Gate and through the Muslim court of the Old City. That is unlikely to happen. Because we know that the police are very much against that. They feel that that would be a very, very dangerous thing to do with the tensions that currently exist in Jerusalem. So it has been set for them to work out what an alternative route might look like, which may be more secure, which may be less provocative and incendiary, but will still allow people to go ahead with their march. So for some people, that compromise is okay. For other people, it really isn't okay. Some people are saying this is the Netanyahu government trying to be insistent upon making that march go ahead no matter what in order to satisfy its right-wing constituency just at the time that the new government is taking office. Others are talking about this being a statement against Hamas. Some people are saying that this is a weakening on our side, that we shouldn't be allowing anybody to dictate to us what route we take through the city of Jerusalem when we want to take undertake a march like this. Miri Regev particularly has been very outspoken, saying that the big army, the police and the Shin Bet seemingly cannot guard the parade. She's been very, very critical of the security services. So all in all, it's controversial on every possible side. And it doesn't matter what will happen from here. There will be a lot of people who will not be satisfied with whatever transpires. Mm.
Is it at all possible, because I know that this will be said, that Netanyahu is perhaps using this to provoke Hamas? Because we know that if a war starts again, everything goes on hold.
Well, the fact that it's been delayed until Tuesday of next week signals to me that that's really after the change of government rather than before. Okay. So, I mean, by that stage...
Because I think that's very important in terms of global opinion, in terms of world press as well. I think that's critical, isn't it?
I think it is. I mean, it certainly has been stated out there that this is an attempt by Netanyahu to prevent the change of government. We know that if there was suddenly to be a conflict breakout, that it would be very, very difficult to then go into a government change, and it would likely necessitate the continuation of the current government, at least until the end of that particular conflict. I think that that's probably a short-term, short-sighted kind of view, because in the end, whether the government changes now, whether it changes in another few weeks after any potential conflict breaks out, I don't think really makes a massive difference. I know that there have been some attempts to try and delay the change of government in the hope that some of those members of Knesset who were prevaricating about whether they will support the new government or not to allow them time to potentially change their minds and to vote against it. It seems as if, though, that time actually has served to work against people who want to see the change, who want to prevent the change of government. In other words, those people who were undecided about supporting the new government have now come out saying that they actually will support the new government, and it seems as if that there are going to be more votes in favor of the confidence vote in the new government than was the case before. So I think that this time is really just helping the change of government rather than preventing it.
Anthony, before I let you go, I do want to ask you about Naftali Bennett, if you can tell us that quickly, the vicious attacks that he's come under from the ultra-Orthodox parties.
Yeah, I'm just absolutely horrified and astonished at this vitriol which is coming out just ahead of the change of government. I mean, we know that coalition agreements have been made public, and some information has come out about what's been included in those coalition agreements, including the fact that Naftali Bennett has agreed that there will be certain changes to the religious landscape, including, you know, a weakening of the strength of the chief rabbinate, potentially a change to the way that kashrut rules are implemented, weakening again of the hold that the chief rabbinate and particularly the ultra-Orthodox community have over the rules of kashrut. Also, the possibility of implementing a civil marriage as opposed to one which is currently controlled by the chief rabbinate. And this has precipitated a massive attack from the ultra-Orthodox parties accusing Naftali Bennett of not being Jewish or being a reformed Jew. I mean, I don't know where these insults might be coming from and why they might use them. Take off your kippah. You don't represent us. We will not be weakened. You know, ultra-Orthodox Judaism will continue to be strong. You losing your mind. Lots and lots of animosity and threats coming out from the ultra-Orthodox parties about some of these proposed changes. And Naftali Bennett, to his credit, has said, this is a government that will represent you as much as it represents everybody else. And so instead of coming back and attacking them and saying you have no right, he's just saying, I want you to know
that when we put this government together,
We will represent you and your interests. And by the way, the ultra-Orthodox community knows that there could be many changes that could be made beyond what's being proposed, which would weaken their situation in Israeli society tremendously. So I think that a certain level, even path, needs to be trodden here, because there's a danger of things really falling apart. I give credit to Naftali Bennett, Yair Lapid, have tried to pull things together rather than to drive the wedge further.
So, certainly something that is very, very concerning. Anthony Reich, we do need to leave it there. It is 8:01. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9 High FM.